All right, well, maybe we'll go ahead and get started. I have a feeling some other coffee drinkers may join us. But I see some different faces from last year. I wore a different outfit, so I can actually clip this to the back of me. Okay. So I'm Julie Smith, and we are here to talk about the Enneagram. This is the last of a four-week series on sort of some of you I know were in the class last spring, or some of you just have studied the Enneagram. And the goal last spring was to sort of go through each type and help you decide perhaps what type you are or what type you might be. And this one was more sort of in sickness and in health. So one of the great things about the Enneagram is it shows you sort of what you're like at your best and as you deteriorate into what may not be your best. And so I think that's one of the reasons that I like the tool. So I'm just curious, I see some different people. How many people here think they might not know their type yet? Everybody knows their type? Okay, that's awesome. Well, then you're sort of familiar with it. So you're not necessarily sitting conducive to this, but I wanted to, or maybe we'll just do it together since it's kind of a little bit of a smaller group. There's something that I like to use when I'm getting adults trying to think a little bit outside of the box, and it's called a thinking routine. And one interesting thing, it sort of holds you in a space and keeps you, like if I said right now, what do you think about the Enneagram? You would probably answer, but I'm going to ask you to do it in a different way. If you could just use one word to describe the Enneagram, what might that be? Any word. So it could be like unknown, if you don't know it, or powerful, or intriguing. Paige and I were talking a little bit. But does any word come to mind? See? Diagnostic. That's very good.
Self.
Pardon?
Self.
Self. Yeah, okay. Any other words?
Revealing.
I like that. Last week I had copied, I wish that we could send you virtual handouts. I'm sure we probably could, but Chris Copeland had written a blog. He's sort of an expert in the Enneagram at Wake Divinity, and he channeled what Lynn said, and that when he wrote a blog, he said the first time he went to an Enneagram conference, he sat there and he felt like the person had opened him up and was looking inside of him. I think revealing is true, because if you really do find your type and you start reading about it, you're sort of, for me, it was the experience of, I actually do that, but I might not have been able to articulate it that clearly. Any other words that come to mind?
Thought-provoking.
Yeah, I like that about it too, that it kind of, the more you know, you feel like you sort of want to know more. So today, we are going to talk about type 8, the challenger. Is anyone in here an 8? I hope so. Nobody's an 8. Does anyone think that they might be closely associated with someone that's an 8? The 8 is the protector. Okay, that's good. So you all might be able to help. A lot in a lot of traditions, the 8 is also called the challenger. So this is someone who is strong and powerful, but they want to assure protection in regard in a tough world. So they seek justice, and they're direct, strong, and action-oriented. So I think usually if you're an 8, you're pretty aware. In that, in every group I've ever been in where they, I've been in all-day workshops where it's like, if you're a 1, go sit here. If you're a 2, if you're a 3, if you look at the 8 section, there's maybe 6 people. So I don't know if it's that they don't want to say they're an 8 or they're not really many 8s. I meant to look that up. There's some people think that there's the most of type 6 in the United States, which is the loyalist and people who are kind of motivated by fear. I don't know how they would have that data, but
one of my best friends.
Okay. Well, do you want to say a little bit about how you know that or what it's maybe like to be with him or her?
Challenging.
What's challenging about it? Okay.
I mean, but she's so supportive of, mm-hmm. like, people that need help. She's always there for them.
Okay.
But she can be a little toxic.
Mm-hmm.
That's a horrible thing to say. I won't mention her name.
Right. Well, and every type can be a little toxic. That's kind of, if we get our slide up, but the health and unhealth that we all have aspects of being toxic, usually when we're under stress or something's wrong or we're in a situation where we don't feel safe or comfortable. So dependable in a certain way. Last week I had it on the handout, and we'll give them to you in a minute, but the speaking style, I didn't highlight that for you last week, but this kind of crystallizes it. Eights are direct, authoritative, zestful, firm, and oriented to truth and justice. Others may perceive eights as confrontational, intimidating, loud, and controlling. Oh, well, that would be very interesting to parent an eight. What were you going to say?
My brother's an eight.
Okay.
And he's a trial lawyer. He's been extremely successful. And when
he's
on the healthy side, he can be very pleasant to be around. When he gets a little bit under stress, he can be intolerable.
Say a little more about the intolerable part.
He is he's autocratic.
Mm-hmm.
He's in your face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you need help, I mean, he will defend you to the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, it says under what the eights tell us, I am strong and protect the weak. I think a little bit if you play with your type, so if you think, we're going to talk about nines in a minute, which are the peacemaker, but if you're a nine with a strong wanting to keep the peace and your child or your brother or someone close to you is an eight, and so they're always moving in and saying, let me tell you how this is. Let me tell you what we're going to do. Let me, and you know, you can see how your type, that's when I really like it in families and in the workplace and even in friendships. But friendships, you can usually just not see that person for a week and take a break. But you can't.
My sister's an eight.
Okay.
I was in the hospital 11 days with my cancer surgery.
Uh-huh.
Her visit was the only thing that made me cry for 11 days.
So say more about that. I was about to say, sort of no filter.
Yeah, and everybody that meets my friends who see her interact with me hate her.
Oh, wow.
I think about AIDS, they're unhealthy, that people hate them. You know, I think, you know, there's a lot of other, you know, they kind of live under the radar.
Uh-huh. I would agree with you from my work. So then that makes me sort of the whole idea of stepping inside another type. I wonder what it might feel like to be an eight, because you've got these passions and you've got this way of being and you've got this sense of justice, and our country at this point is pretty oriented towards black, white, right, wrong. So it's kind of a great environment for an eight to get very triggered and agitated. And so I think sometimes when you go to how might it feel to be trying to be that kind of person, you can begin to think, wow, because I think that's an interesting, I see you holding up a two. I did look this up this week. Under a lot of systems, an eight, if they're becoming healthy, they move towards a two. So does that make a little bit of sense? Do you ever see that in your sister? What does that look like? Mm-hmm. Okay.
It can turn her fierceness on cause, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other part is I don't understand in any temperament, whether you use Enneagram or any other
right,
way,
right.
The nature-nurture part.
That's so interesting,
and,
yeah.
So if someone is born by nature to be an eight and then has a seven on the A scale,
yeah. Yeah.
I
do. Yeah. Why don't you say a little bit about that scale?
Adverse childhood experience, ACE, and there's a paradigm. what's wrong with you, but what happened to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you had a really traumatic childhood, it affects you at the molecular level, and I think it really can hold people in that unhealthy part of whoever they are.
And one of the goals of knowing your type is how, remember last week, if you were here, I said these are really just 9 ways to see the face of God. So if you're a Christian and you're an 8, so this is not a Christian tool, but we are here and we are Christians, is that how is God going to move into me? And that I think a very Christian belief is that I have a unique role to play in the world. We're made in the image of God. So despite all those things, I think everyone in here, most people in here are over 30, except for one person. But you know that your wounds are something that if you're at all actualized, you're going to find, and that often our deepest wounds are where we actually give something back to the world. That just takes some maturity and some courage. So I think the last week we didn't spend quite as much time on the awareness practice, but 8s are great for that because I do think it's a hard number, and that's we're kind of landing on that. And we all kind of tend to pull back. One thing I don't think we teach children enough is conflict resolution skills, in that you and I can disagree, but we're mostly like, don't fight, don't hit each other on the playground, don't yell, don't. And, you know, there's some healthy ways to lean into conflict and some not. So an 8 might really benefit from some conflict resolution, but to affirm that person and say, you have a role to play through the eyes of God that someone that is a 2 is not going to do. So what is it? What is your God-given work that is going to be with you? Their challenges, all of the challenges are overwhelming for every number, but theirs are excessive, angry, dominating, lustful. But the last one is sort of where I want to land. They're afraid of vulnerability. So every type's afraid of something. I highly recommend, with the holidays coming, this book by Chris Copeland. I had it last week, The Heart of the Enneagram. It's the best, simplest book, and he pairs it with his podcasts, which are very penetrable. But on the 8, his description is the tender heart. So when 8s don't feel safe or don't feel invited, are they going to be soft-hearted? But that's their sort of recovery. You know, and I bet you see that in your sister. And siblings are probably difficult because it's in your family.
He's a very good person. But mm-hmm. The whole point of, and the reason I brought up self, is if you know yourself and you can keep yourself in a healthy state, then you don't allow other people to affect you as that person.
Yes.
And that's the point. And there are times when he's a great person.
Right.
But he can be hard to tolerate. But then all of us can. So
right.
The point is, if you can be
didn't you mention that he's a trial lawyer?
Oh, yeah.
So I would be a terrible trial lawyer. I would cave in. Do we need trial lawyers?
He's very good.
I'm sure he's phenomenal.
He's helped a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd rather have an insurance company than eat breakfast.
Well, that's a gift, I guess.
So, I mean,
one of the things I notice about our types is that the thing we fear the most.
Mm-hmm.
There may be some very good truth.
So use your own type to flesh that out a little bit more.
Yeah.
Aren't you a 7?
If you want to know me in my 20s and 30s, I'm just saying, thank God for Jesus. But, you know, my I guess my deepest fear is abandonment.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm 2.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. So it's like an unconscious fulfillment of your deepest fear.
Yeah, if you study any shadow writers, that same thing, Marianne Williamson and Debbie, whatever her name is, that, you know, they talk about that unhealthy part of us will almost certainly make the worst thing happen.
So when we talk about health, so if an 8 under health is going towards a two and becoming more helpful, and becoming the opposite of fear of abandonment is desire to be connected. So eights need help feeling safe, being connected beyond challenging, right? They need help being connected. But their unhealth is to move to a five. And fives tend to sort of wall themselves off, pull away, shut down. And you could see how a challenger does that, because in a lot of conversations they're having, they're doing their inner heart, but the feedback they're getting from you is not like, wow, we really love having you here. It's more like, you're making me uncomfortable, I want to get away. The awareness practice is, I wanted something both of you said, you know, when you're getting, you feel your emotion getting super out of control, and depending on your type and your personality, you may or may not let that know, but that's sort of being triggered. And you know when you're getting that way. And I think the Enneagram, you know what things trigger you. And so when you can see that, you can kind of pause and become less judgmental of yourself and more of a witness and say, oh, I'm just triggered, or I'm just being an eight, or I'm just being a nine. And so the awareness practice here, it said, observe your habit of mind and focus of attention with as little judgment as possible. Ask yourself the following questions. How does my big energy express itself? So if you're an eight, you could see how that would be a good question, and that it might not be the right place. Like, the Thanksgiving dinner table might not be the place to get everybody all some big social justice issue. It might, depending on your family, but it might not. The other one is, when do I just go for what I want without thinking? That would be very eight. You know the image of a bull in a china shop? I think, does that kind of how your friend feels? They're just kind of going to go. They're just going to kind of do it, and then they're going to think about it later. And the other one that I liked was, in what ways do I forget to be sensitive or tender, first towards myself and others? So the eight is walking around with a pretty heavy, I imagine, dose of judging themselves and internal challenging. Because remember, the heart of the Enneagram is about what's going inside of you. So not everyone can see. I think the eight is easy to see because eights have such a pull, especially at inopportune times. I mean, here you're in the hospital, you don't feel well, you're scared, and then your sister's just, you know. But that's classic of an eight. So Lynn was good about helping me stay on time last week. So I want to be sure we get to the nine. And since it's the last class, I want to be sure we look ahead. But some of you, Nancy Dunn was big on reading the prayers. And I'd love to sort of close out the eight with reading the prayer in the Chris Copeland book before we go on to the nine. Because it's so interesting to be doing eight and nine in the same week, because they're together on the wheel, but they're very different. So here's the prayer for the eight. Loving protector, watch my back as I wade into the waters of waiting, and hold me as I delay my impact. Empty me of my need to assert myself or to blame others when life seems out of control. Soften the walls surrounding my heart, the rigid boundaries, my strong opinions. Embrace me as I wait, so that I may know the richness and stillness, and open my heart to the affection of others. So I think when you begin to think of what an eight needs, and possibly if it's your sibling or your partner or your child, you might not be the one to offer it. Somebody told me that one time. I was worried about something with one of my children, and I was like, I just don't know what to do. And they looked at me and said, well, you might not be the one to help them. And I was like, oh, you're right. And rats, I want to fix it. But I just think that gives me some compassion. If you've ever tried to work with an eight in a workplace situation, it's challenging. But it can be good for organizations, right? Because we don't want to become complacent. So does anybody else have a last thought or something burning that they want to say about the eight before we?
I'll share one thing.
Okay.
This friend of mine I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I always feel like she's trying to buy my affection.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay.
If I go to her house, I end up with food and gift cards. She just wants to keep. It's like she's
okay.
Kind of buying it, you know, which I think is kind of interesting.
What
that's been very consistent over the years.
What makes me wonder about that is, if it's hard for you to open your heart, which is harder, opening your heart and being vulnerable or giving a gift? So I think it's a way to sort of get halfway up against that wound and that void, but not, because if, I mean, it's hard enough to open your heart. If, you know, there's some types that do that more naturally, but it's scary.
It's just almost embarrassing. She's just like, huh.
It might be interesting. I don't want to go too far that down that rabbit trail, and I'm not an expert, but you have something very clear that she does that you don't think she needs to do. So what could you do to help her in those moments when she's giving you things? Is there something you might say to her?
I say to her, you don't need to buy my affection, you know?
So could you say that? You could, though. Sometimes I think when we know someone's type and we know the patterns, what we don't do is we plan our day, we plan our grocery list, we plan our Thanksgiving dinner, but we don't plan how to help us in difficult moments. And when the moment's difficult, where are your emotions? Where's your heart? You're not going to remember it. But I do a lot of work with parents, and I try to help them because they come with the same things. It's like, it's your kid's going to do this again. You just told me they did it 20 times. So if you sort of know, and your friend has done this, if you sort of prepare something, even if you say half of it, because that might be your gift to her. Do you know your type? What's your type?
Okay.
Yeah. That'd be a good companion.
Uh-huh.
It's real. Well, we are consistent, even when we don't mean to be. You had something that you wanted to mention that looked like about an eight. Okay. Did it take you a while to figure that out? How long did it take you to figure that out?
Well, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know she was an eight.
Right. Coming to these. Yeah. Okay, right now. Oh, good. Do you feel like that's going to be helpful to have that knowledge that you're married to an eight?
Well, I've learned more about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was going to add something about the eight to kind of talk about the feelings and the connection to other people. And this was helpful for me because there are a lot of leaders in the Episcopal Church who are eights. We have a bishop who's an eight. I've had several bosses through the years that are eights. And I read, I think it was in Susan Sewell's book, that, The Path Between Us, that talks about relationships. And in the eighth chapter, a woman was quoted as saying, you know, I'm an eight, and I have a finite amount of, like, feeling, mushy, lovey-dovey kind of part of my heart. A finite part of that. And I spend it here, and I spend it here, and there's nothing else. Like, that, like I choose where the places are where I can be vulnerable and sort of deeply engaged. And then there's kind of an end to that. In the same way that other types have kind of a finite amount of other connections, that's the eighth thing. Anytime that they try to expand that finite amount, they move to the two. They move to the place where they're able to get in touch with their feelings and be able to express them and show them in ways that are affectionate or articulate, you know, using your words, using other ways and gifts or action to show people love. So that was hugely helpful for me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We all do this because of deep feelings. And whenever I interact with AIDS, I'm like, I don't get that. Like, how does that work for you in being a pastor? And it's because that's how they know to function in the world. So it was very enlightening.
When I think ideally at times the church is an eight, in that unless we think the culture as it is inspired by God, you know, there's a certain aspect of the church calling us into a different way of being and interacting with the world. So I could see that's interesting, but I would find that challenging.
Yes. It's interesting to just sit back and listen, which is what I do a lot. The depth,
it's my husband,
of the emotion that's wrapped around, you know, some of it negative, like appreciative of the people, but you know, with other types, I don't see the depth.
Well, if you go back to the little game I had us play at the beginning, the word, you probably play it better now. But one word that comes to my mind is intensity, or even intimidating. But that depth, I think others have intensity, but they modulate themselves, especially nines. It's interesting. I like it when other people can weigh in. If I'm closely associated to an eight, I'm unaware. You know, you can guess. Hi, welcome. So we're going to go on to the peacekeeper, which, how does that make you feel if I say going to the one word? We're going to talk about the challenger. Think, what does that make you feel? What do you think? And then if I say we're going to talk about the peacekeeper, I think it's just interesting for me, just the name of the type. Some of them I don't know, like the six, the loyalist, I'm not even sure what that means. I mean, I am, but peacekeeping, I think, is something we say we value as a culture, but then we actually don't really know how to operationalize that very well. So I think this is and I do work closely with a nine, and I think my husband is a nine. So that, okay, anyone else? Okay. Okay, and you're one. You're one. Anyone else think they're a nine or closely associated? You think you're a nine? Okay. So you want to keep the peace. Well, you can help us. Let's start with this because this fascinates me. And the person I work the absolute closest with is a nine, and that works very well because I'm a six. But we are accused, rightly so, of sometimes not leaning into difficulty enough or keep being so afraid and peacekeeping together that sometimes we don't take hold of things we need to because neither of us likes it. But a nine under stress actually goes to a six. So sixes are afraid, they sort of pull back, they're not sure, they like support. So as nines go more unhealthy, they pull more and more in and feel very driven by fear. But under health, this is what fascinates me, they go to a three, which is the achiever. So nines are so generally, apparently, tranquil that when they become healthier, they're taking a hold of some things, and that achiever is kind of got the to-do list and checking boxes and going to get things done. I'll just read you here. It's called, mediator. So it can be the peacekeeper or the mediator. They believe that to be loved and valued, you must blend in and go with the flow. Consequently, mediators seek harmony and are inclusive, amiable, easygoing, comfortable, and steady. But they also can be self-forgetting, conflict-avoidant, and stubborn. And when you look at what their focus of attention is, it's other people's agendas and the external environment. So those of you who are nines or close to nines, does that sound like what you do? Totally? Does that sound like Mark?
Very nicely.
Does that sound like you? You must work with a nine. Impossibly.
Well, I think the fellow that is our director is a nine. And he won't ever take a stand. It's this thing today and that thing today, and I don't want to make anybody mad. I don't want to offend anybody. Those are admirable qualities, but at times you got to make decisions and move on.
Or perhaps they're not suited to his role.
Well, he would be better in another role than that role.
Right. I think that's interesting when you start thinking about career counseling and things like that, and not that you can't grow or become, but you know.
I think if you're healthy within your type, other types aren't as offensive.
Interesting. So
the healthier you are, whatever type you are, then they don't get to you as readily.
Yeah.
If you're in a balanced state. And that's a hard place to be. It's a real hard
place. Yeah. I think last week we talked a little about, I think one of the goals of the Enneagram is to be rooted not just in your type and who you are, but the root of our stability comes from Christ and from our relationship to God. So for me, this is just a tool. You know, say I'm a peacekeeper and I'm about to enter into some big conflict and there's no remedy, I have to. It's just a reminder of, wait, I'm just here to serve God. This is not harmful. You know, it's you can kind of self-talk yourself and take that pause. You know, we've been doing some sort of silence when we worked with Chris Copeland, some of the spiritual practices of silence and meditation. I think you do those by yourself so that in the real world, even a 30-second pause. If I were to pause right now and give you 30 seconds of silence, you'd be like, wow, this is a long time. So other comments about the nine?
Those three types he calls self-forgetting. And each type of those three has a different way that they forget themselves, or they forget what's going on in my body. Where do I feel stress? Or how am I, you know, the two get so caught up in helping and being other-oriented that they forget what's going on with them. And the nine, you said a second ago, is attuned to the external. Always looking to, where the needs are in the community that he's around, and how can he smooth them out? And it means that he sort of forgets, wait, what do I think about this? What do I want to contribute? How do I have an opinion? And it can come into, simple a conversation as, where do you want to go to eat for dinner?
Yep. That's a good one, yeah. Yeah. But is that always true? Does he sometimes actually have an opinion?
He always has an opinion, but he suppresses it.
Right.
Now you said the nine, three, and one at a time?
No, the nine, the one, and the two are self-forgetting.
They're very, so the helper.
You said nine, one, and three, or nine, one, and two?
Nine, one, and two. She said three, and four. Yes,
okay,
she did.
Because I can see where the achiever would forget themselves and just keep going.
Yeah. Well, the two, it's easy to see because they're so focused on helping that I think a nine and a two could be confused. They can, it's different, but they, yeah. The one is, well, I'll let Sarah talk about it. How are you self-forgetting since you are one? I mean, that would be, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, that would be. Yeah, that's well said. That's because a one is scanning the horizon for what can I improve? Would that be?
And what is right and wrong?
Yeah. Okay. So that's kind of interesting. Yeah. Well, I like the challenges of the nine. So we I think their strengths are pretty clear, or they're really clear to me. But I'll just read them. They're excellent mediators. So I love that because I work in a world that has a lot of conflict, and that's usually not great. So I love. Work in a school where there's not right or wrong. It's not that simple. You know, if someone's unhappy, there's not like some manual for me to look up. They're caring. I like that. They're supportive. They're adaptive. They're steady. They're receptive. And they're non-judgmental. So the six in me is like, I love that. So I married a nine. So that's working out really well in that we're both somewhat conflict adverse, you know, and I think nine, to me, it's easy to see the gifts, but that some of that is my type because that's where I go under health, and so I love being around a nine because if you're a nine, I can sort of slurp into your qualities that I actually desperately need. But their challenges are not nothing. That's why I asked you the question about Mark because actually, and when a nine gets upset, it's real deal, okay? It's there's not a whole lot of warning. Because I think they've been mediating. Okay. So their challenges are they can be stubborn, ambivalent, self-forgetful, indecisive, and conflict avoidant. But the stubborn piece in my colleague, when she digs her heels in, it's real deal. I mean, one day I was like, you just got to stop digging your heels in. Like, it's not. You know, so I think it's interesting that I think you were talking a little bit about we can tend to overcompensate. And so I think The way I explained it to someone recently is when you're doing something that's not your natural way of being. So nines want to keep the peace. They want people to be together. They want the Thanksgiving dinner table to be filled with light and goodness and turkey. And if you're a vegetarian, they just want everyone to be happy, right? And so that's something that we're, you know, very drawn to.
I think they're also very good balancers.
Okay.
It's funny, I'm a seven. I date a nine. And it's like steady. Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
and my son is married, I think, is kind of, I know like three relationships that are like nines and sevens, and I just see that the nine is just steady there.
Mm-hmm. They're steady.
A balancer.
Yeah. A nine is a balancer for sure.
Stubbornness is their power.
Uh-huh. Talk about that. Why is that a power for them?
Mm-hmm. So that stubbornness is the passive way of being.
Uh-huh, I agree with that. And it's a surprise. So if you've been dating a nine or closely related to a nine, and usually everything goes along well, then when they turn around and dig in, you don't have a lot of tools because you don't have much experience with them being that way. It always feels like a surprise to me. It's like, wait a minute, what? How did we get here? You know, so I think when we surprise each other, it's our reactions are maybe more triggered and maybe we react more because most people don't love to be surprised. I mean, maybe someone does, but not emotionally surprised. What you said, you were a nine. Do you have any thoughts? Are we hitting it on the head or not really? Or you like to keep the peace? I think it's interesting. I think you brought up the nature versus nurture. The two people I know, so my husband is the middle child. So that's a really nice way for someone to be a nine, especially in a single-sex family. So three brothers, to be the middle of three, that's a very natural way. And my colleague is the baby of five, but everyone else is a boy. And so I do think it's interesting, and I don't have that kind of expertise on either thing, but it is interesting to me. I tend to fall on the side of, especially I've worked a lot with very, very young children, and I think you come with quite a bit. And if your environment is at all reasonable, I kind of always say if you have one caretaker who stands in there with you pretty boldly, you can probably come out pretty well. You know, not everybody, but that, talking about the environmental triggers, is if one adult is safe, stable, secure. But I do, even as young as children that are like two, you see that temperament. I mean, all two-year-olds can dig in and kind of act like an eight, but underneath that moment, you... And most Enneagram experts kind of tend to think you come with your type and the environment triggers and activates certain pieces of it. Or, yeah. Okay. But you could have a nine wing. We can't get into wings, but I got, you know, if you're a nine, you either have a one wing or an eight wing, which is kind of interesting, but that's a whole nother. Yeah, I have a friend who kept saying, I don't know what I am, I don't know what I am. And he still doesn't, but I think a nine with an eight wing is interesting because you want to keep the peace, but when you think it, you really think it. Were you going to say something? Yeah, I thought you might be. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Huh.
Uh-huh. So I had to hold it to him in a way that didn't sound like this is what I want you to do. I'm a one, but
I was gonna say you're not a nine.
I was trying to hold it to him in a way that gave him two choices, not a whole lot. Uh-huh. Because it's hard for him to make decisions, but I said, if you are up to it, I know it's raining, you know.
It was raining. Give him the couch. Right. And he's laughing.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way you're phrasing it, please yourself. And with the nines I'm with, I think they often, eights don't have trouble thinking of themselves, like they, it's right there, but nines have more trouble thinking of themselves. And sort of, if you're, you know, if you're a parent or a spouse or a partner or a coworker of a nine, how do you help them grow into being able to sort of find their voice and their, yeah. Okay. Congratulations.
But he was 4 or 5 years of struggle. Uh-huh. And needless to say, he won the state this past February, but he had 2 months off from the season because of a double concussion. And the prior year before that, he was cheated out of the state championship by the referee and other teams. So now, when you finally win the states, it should be like, oh, let's turn off the tables and scream and holler.
Uh-huh, but not, yeah. Well, that's a beautiful example, though, of how nines are self-forgetting in a good way. And I think our culture encourages us to be self-centered in certain ways. So I think sort of our most beautiful part is also a weakness. But I think to be able to be as young as you are and win and not say, I did it, look at me. And so what's the, you were the one saying balance is trickier. And it's hard. I like to even go, balance to me still keeps you sort of on the surface of the earth, but I like the idea of rooted because it goes deeper. And I believe that God's love for us and our relationship with him takes us beyond. So I believe people that aren't leaning on God have to balance, but we have the privilege of going deep. And it takes us even beyond sort of the because balance is really hard. I mean, if you actually are, talk about, a lot of Enneagram experts talk about what you're feeling in your body. And so if you've ever tried to balance in really difficult poses or difficult ways, you understand how hard balance can be. It is very challenging. I wanted to highlight this. I like Chris's book because it has little charts. And if I was next level, we'd have a slide, but we don't, and I don't work here, and I don't know how to use the tech here. But the vice or the habit of mind, I love taking the judgment out and not thinking it as a vice, but just the habit of your mind. You didn't choose it. It's just the way you're wired. The nine, the habit of mind that they tend towards in unhealth is slothfulness. Not getting things done. Inertia. Yes? Just not jumping. Now, you know, if you know anything, you could see how if you're one wing or you're a perfectionist and you're a nine, that's going to make you feel a little different. And maybe in the spring, Sarah's going to teach again. Maybe we can get... I love the wings, because I think, you know, a nine doesn't tell the whole story. I mean, a nine with a strong eight wing that's challenging is going to feel very different, whereas a nine with a one wing is going to be working to some degree towards being a perfectionist. But I love that that's their weakness, is sort of slothfulness. And to go back to the eight, their habit of mind is blame. So their negative habit of mind and where they get stuck is blame. But the nine, if you understand the root of what seems like indecisiveness and slothfulness, it's got a good root. You know, the idea of wanting to help and wanting to keep the peace, the awareness practice they have is observe your habit of mind with as little judgment as possible. So that's what they all say. Ask yourself the following questions. In what ways do I just go along with others' agendas? And that's what can lead to them finally acting out. How do I get distracted from my real priorities? So they will tend to get distracted. How am I stubborn? And then I like the last question is, what makes me angry? And I think it's, you know, it's useful for all of us to find out what makes us angry. But nines particularly, do you think nines like to be angry? No, they're like running back, but yet, is it possible to walk about the earth and not be angry? Of course not. I mean, it's not bad. it's just something to notice and deal with. It's sort of unmetabolized anger that, do we need to stop? I know you're preaching, okay. So I think what interests me, and what we don't really have time to get into, but what interests me a lot about the Enneagram is how can it be a tool to help us grow? How can we help each other? How can just the knowledge of that, like what could that tool do in my family? What could that tool do in my workplace? What could that tool do for us in our church? And instead of, you know, Chris and I just going at each other on a committee, say we're on a committee together, and Chris is acting one way and I'm acting another way. I mean, this is real life, right? Every time we go, Chris wants to take the minutes this way and I want to take the minutes this way. It's like, actually, we're trying to do the work of God. Could you get off the arguing about the minutes, but the arguing about the minutes or whatever is real. It happens. It's, you know, you had a beautiful example from the bazaar where someone was very specific about how they wanted the food served. And you want to say what they said? You don't have to say their name.
Well, so we were just putting the lasagna together and we kept being told, that's too much ricotta. You're not supposed to do anything like that. And then finally turned around to this person and said, I've been doing this for 9 years. It's fine to stop. And so the person said, I'm a one. You tell.
But what I hear in that is, I'm being myself, but can you forgive me?
Yeah.
You know, it was sort of a way to out. And what I love about the example was once she got called in it, she knew. So we'll maybe end by reading the 9 prayer, and then Sarah needs to go, but I'll give you a little tiny preview of her spring class. Is that okay? Prayer for the 9. For my gentleness of spirit, openness of heart, and ability to remain steady and calm, I give you thanks. While I long to be seen and known by others, help me recognize that by going along to get along and not sharing my own opinions and desires, I reinforce my sense of invisibility. Give me the wisdom to recognize that by owning and offering my own deepest feelings, I will not lose my inner peace. Amen. Okay. This one's called the Heart of the Enneagram. Okay. I do.
Well, see, I do.
I think we can activate and not activate certain parts of it, but I think we are born. Lynn may differ. I mean, Lynn deals with people. What exactly? And what? And where we can help parents of children is, how often does a parent say, I wish my child were more competitive? I put them out in the swimming pool and they don't want to run the race or whatever it is. I'm like, have fun with that. Now, can we coach that child to participate in a swim meet? Of course we can. But, you know, you're not going to make a rabbit into an elephant. And so I think that's, and it's also helpful that if your child keeps acting a certain way, guess what? You didn't do it. I think parents take way too much credit and way too much blame. Your kid comes a certain way. And in a, what I call a pretty wide swath of typical families, you know, I mean, there's way pathology, and that's has absolutely they have their, and I think your thing of balance, seeing boldly your gifts and your weaknesses, I don't think we need to be afraid of the weaknesses, because those we tend to be like, oh well, I do that, I'm so embarrassed, whatever. But I loved the lasagna. It's like, I'm a one and I'm acting like a one. You know, she didn't have to grovel. A one wouldn't grovel anyway, but that's just kind of how it was. So in the spring, Sarah is going to, after Advent and some other things, have y'all heard of Susan Stabile? She did a one-day workshop last year at Duke. And she, when I was talking to Dixon about this, he recommended Suzanne as one of the more Christian. So not everyone talking about the Enneagram is talking about it from a Christian point of view. But this one is called The Path Between Us. So it's going to be a little bit more about, if Lynn and I are working together, what does that mean? You know, how does a 6 respond to a 2? Or what if a 5 is working with a 9? It's going to look sort of at how they're related. I don't know that she's going to get, I mean, the hard part about the Enneagram is there's just so much information to share. You have to have a certain amount of patience to get through all the types. But she's going to sort of use this book, and Suzanne Stabile also has podcasts. And she has a whole website, and each person, I think, brings their unique view to the Enneagram, and hers is a little bit different than Chris Copeland's or blah, 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 blah. But Sarah's going to kind of dig into this, and I know Nancy Dunn's not here today, but I think she still has her Enneagram group. Is it, does anybody at 2 on Mondays? Okay. Well, and Sarah and I have talked about starting a group that's in the evenings. If 2 o'clock's not a great time of day for you, evenings are challenging in a different way. But I do think this can bear more than a Sunday school format. You know, this kind of just, if you love it like I do, this just kind of whets your appetite. And you don't really get the level of interaction and depth. So there's talk of an evening group where you can dig. And I think hearing others talk, I mean, I've learned so much from you all this morning, hearing you talk about yourselves and your interactions. I think that's why there's the whole narrative tradition, is hearing people talk. So thanks for coming. I think next week we'll be moving towards Advent, which is hard to believe. Is that right? Stabil, Suzanne Stabil, if you want to write it down, I have it. So the Lord be with you. Thanks for coming.